everyone, welcome to the third episode of Jill is in the air, accepting Tourette before and after the diagnosis. Today I have the pleasure to welcome Devine Lacroix, who is a former Tourette Association of America Mid-Atlantic Chapter board member and who has been living with Tourette's. Hello Devine, how are you?
Good, how are you all today?
E.G. Gidner is also here with us. E.G. Gidner is a TTAG board member and also lives with Tourette syndrome. Hi, E.G., how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Christelle, thank you.
And last but not least, I am happy that Paul Stevenson is here. Paul Stevenson is a Genius Within and Tourette Action Ambassador and will tell us about his life with Tourette syndrome as well. Hello, Paul, how are you?
Hi, nice to meet you. Great to be here. Thank you.
So I have a few questions for all three of you, and I think it will be very interesting to hear about your life experiences and opinions. So first, Devine, can you tell us when did you first develop tics and what were they?
I was 5 years old, just about to go into second grade. So my first development of tics started early of 2002. And it was a lot of blinking, nose scrunching, clearing of my throat. Humming was a really big one. I would hum when there was no music around. What else? I had a lot of stomach rolls where I would like bend over at the waist. I would have a lot of face crunching, leg and arm jerking. I have so many stories when I've bumped into people uncontrollably. My parents thought originally that I was having seizures.
What about you, Paul?
So, I know now Tourette's is a lifelong condition, but I didn't become aware of having Tourette syndrome until I was age 46, after I experienced some PTSD. And while my brain was dealing with the trauma, it lost the ability to hold the tics in. And so the tics, both vocal and motor, exploded from me, age 46.
And you, E.G.?
The first ones I remember when I was in what we would call in the United States about third grade, so maybe I was 9 years old, I started having facial grimaces. I suspect I probably was, blinking before that. I guess I was a fidgety kid in general, but that's what I really remember. And sort of a traumatic event. I was a nerdy, scrawny little kid on the bus to school, sitting in the seat right behind the driver, because that's just how nerdy I was. And I suddenly my face just started contorting. The girl sitting across the aisle from me looked at me and said, "What are you doing?" And I, covered my face with my hands and just said, "Oh, I'm just chewing on my fingernail." And she said, "That doesn't look like any fingernail chewing I've ever seen." And I think really what's notable about that is this is probably 15 seconds into me, starting a lifetime of virtually nonstop tics, and I was already covering for it. So I was just instinctively making an excuse. And of course, I had no idea what it was or why I was doing it. So it was pretty frightening, actually.
Okay. And so it was pretty obvious from the start in school, right?
Oh, absolutely. My parents thought that definitely there was something going on. They originally thought I was having seizures. So it was definitely noticeable.
Okay. So before this age, Paul, you didn't feel anything besides the urge or an inside feeling. Is that right?
Well, I'm from a generation educated and brought up in the 1960s and 70s. And there wasn't very much known about Tourette syndrome then. So nobody could identify. So asking my parents if they noticed any history of Tourette's, because obviously before the age of 18 is part of the criteria of diagnosis, I had to, have a history of it. I couldn't remember anything about it other than having a chaotic life and getting bullied at school. But my parents said I used to cough, roll my eyes. Thank you, Matic just did a demonstration then, and sniff. And while I sniffed, I used to rub the end of my nose. So all these sort of, which now I know are simple vocal and motor tics, they got carried off as just characteristics that I had. thought they were part of my quirky personality. So I wasn't conscious, no. I if anybody had asked me, do you have Tourette's syndrome? I'd have been like, no, I don't. But age 46, they kicked off then. No, I'd never heard of it. My first recognition of Tourette's syndrome was a QED documentary on BBC One called John's Not Mad, about John Davidson when he was 15 year old, and he has Tourette's and coprolalia. And that was the first time I saw it. I was intrigued. At the time, I thought it was funny. And then I thought, this isn't funny, really. So I had a lot of empathy for John in the program, but I still didn't make a connection that I had Tourette syndrome.
And so did your parents, e.g., at that time, suspect it was tics or not quite?
Well, we never really talked about it in my family until I got diagnosed when I was 44. And I was, I was kind of a private kid anyway. So, you know, I got bullied a lot, shoved into lockers, mocked, a lot of school. I kind of lived in fear every day. But I didn't come home and tell my parents that. And they, maybe one time they asked why I was made those faces, and I said I didn't know. And that was our only conversation about tics until I got diagnosed at 44 and mentioned it. And of course, this was, 1969 in Thornton, Pennsylvania. Nobody knew about Tourette's. So, even if we had decided to do something about it, there was nothing to do about it. So, but I really sort of internalized all that bullying and mocking. Just being the one at school who's always picked on, I just kind of put that in a box and turned inside myself and really became quite a bit of a loner. I mean, I always had a few friends, maybe a friend at a time, but really my dream growing up was just to go take a job out in the wilderness somewhere where I wasn't around any people at all, so I wouldn't be bothered, I guess. And that's, of course, not how my life turned out, thankfully. But that was the dream there, because it really was pretty painful. And, interactions with people were fraught with danger because you didn't know what was going to happen.
Okay, so I guess you went to the doctor pretty quickly after the tics started?
Oh, yes, they wasted no time.
Yeah. Okay, and so you were diagnosed within a year?
Yes, I would say, honestly, within 6 months. It was pretty quick. It was a very quick process.
Okay, and so do you remember who diagnosed you? Was it a neurologist, a pediatrician?
I believe it was a neurologist. So I was diagnosed at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, that's in Pennsylvania. And I know that my psychiatrist that I worked with was also a neurologist as well. So I had, both sides of the coin there, which was very useful.
Okay. But so did you remember the diagnosis, because you were 5 or 6, right?
I personally do not remember the diagnosis. My mother does, though, and she and I talked beforehand just so I could have the whole process. She and I talked about this, my diagnosis before I talked with you today. She was stating how there was a bunch of tests I went through. I remember pressing a button a lot of times on the screen. They also did neurological hookups to my head as well. And I remember just feeling so stressed out and super anxious over it. And just the fact of them putting something on my head just, scared me very much. And the doctors, from that alone, the doctors like, yeah, we can tell she has Tourette's. The way her hypersensitivity is to all of this is definitely a cause factor.
Yeah. And did your mother suspect it before you had a diagnosis? Or do you have any other siblings with Tourette? Or did you know anyone else, peers, friends?
So no, we had no idea. But the same day I got diagnosed, my father and my younger sister were diagnosed with Tourette as well.
Oh wow! So they were in the room when the doctor.
My father was. my mother was and I was. And then my sister, within a month later down the road, was diagnosed as well.
And so was it a shock? Like, did your parents know about Tourette?
Oh, no, it was 100% shock. We had no idea it was in our family. My mother explained it as, if you've ever seen the movie The Poltergeist, it's like she was walking down the hallway and the hallway lights just kept continuing and going and going. And she just remembered feeling complete and utter shock this all. My dad, 100% too, because he went through his whole, pretty much his whole life and not ever knowing that this is what he had, but he knew something was there. He just didn't have a name for it.
So I suppose his tics were less severe than yours?
Yes, 100%. His is more with his comorbid conditions, OCD, definitely anxiety. If anything, his tics is more hand fidgeting and texture. He likes to like mess with rubber bands and pens or pencils a lot. But definitely out of the three of us, him, myself, and my sister, I have the more severe tics.
And so how did your whole family cope with it, cope with the announce? Was it a relief in some ways?
I would say in some ways, because we had a name for it, but at the same time, it opened up a whole nother door of things we had no idea about. So we definitely had a time of like just, what do we do now? But my dad then called the Tourette Association, and we were able to go forward and then find the doctor that helped us pretty much start this whole journey with Tourette and with tics. Dr. Peter Myers, who is no longer with us, but an amazing individual, and he helped us a whole lot in our family.
Hmm. And so, Paul, I know it was different before, and for sure many tics can be invisible and not obvious, but did someone else but your parents make any comments or suggestions that it could be tics, like your peers or teachers, partners?
No, to be truthful, people used to say to me, why do you keep doing that with your eyes? Why do you keep raising your eyebrows? Why do you keep throwing your head back? And I didn't know why I threw my head back. I didn't have coprolalia. I just had simple vocal tics, but I was in a habit of being very inappropriate in what I said to people. So I had a lack of filter, and that was noticed by a lot of people. As a young person in school, in education in 1970s, that used to get me into a lot of trouble. And I used to think, why have I said that? I could never understand why I'd shouted something out. So
okay. And so you would just feel like an unpleasant feeling, right? Not understanding why you would do it and not really having the insight of pinpointing it.
Right. So as a young person, I didn't fit in. I've been diagnosed with ADHD as well, which is another lifelong condition. So I spent my life trying to fit in when really I was born not to fit in. You know, I always thought there was something different about me, because children can be a bit tough sometimes. And the school system back in the 70s, if I did anything or I said anything, I would get physical punishment. So basically, I learned to mask, you know, and cover things up. So if I did do a tick, which I didn't know was a tick, but I knew it was something different, something unusual, I would try and carry it off by when I had a neck tick, I would throw my head back and then brush my hair back as I did it at the same time. So there must have been a connection of knowing that there was an urge there, but not recognizing about that it was being able to put a name to of Tourette syndrome to it. I really wish I could have done as a child, because then I would have been able to explore, educate myself and understand the condition. But sadly, I didn't know it was Tourette syndrome.
And did you have any other, like, you know, ADHD or OCD at that time, or this came after as well?
Yes. Yeah. Right. So I've got a school report from when I was 13 years old, and it said, do not be misled by Paul's high attainment level. He's nothing but a class clown, a fool, a joker, easily distracted and distracts others. So right away, there, out of like 30 children, I came like second in an exam, which is a great high attainment level, but yet the report was condemning. So now as teacher would look at that and think, wow, we've got something here. But back in those days, it was ignored and told my parents that I were a bad child, really. And I wasn't.
Did you know anyone else in the school with tics or with these kind of feelings?
I had friends who had tics. This is a strange thing. You know, I was drawn to people who were different, who looked quirky, who were funny, used to make me laugh. So I obviously observed characteristics in them that I had, and even though I didn't have a name for them. So in later years, I've contacted a lot of my school friends, and one in particular has Tourette syndrome. He's never had a diagnosis, but he has Tourette syndrome. He's not had a medical diagnosis, but he does have vocal and motor tics, and he's got ADHD. And I would say the vast majority of my best friends at school, who I've contacted since I've made documentaries, have been in touch, have all been diagnosed with ADHD. So obviously we were drawn together because of the ND condition that we had.
Yeah. And so finally, who diagnosed you?
So, right, up to the age of 46. Now, when my tics became that noticeable that they couldn't be put down to anything, it was a very, very scary period of time. And you can understand why parents get worried and upset when the child's diagnosed with Tourette syndrome. They feel very frightened. I just had no control over these tics whatsoever. You know, tic attacks on the floor. I dislocated my knees, my shoulders. The tics were so violent. So I got diagnosed in a hospital in the northeast of England, in Newcastle. My doctor, my personal GP, who I'd been friends with for a while, just he couldn't believe what it was. And I actually watched another Tourette's program. I was looking for answers, and I saw a program on the BBC, and I and my wife looked at me and said, "Paul, you've got Tourette's syndrome." And I'm like, "Impossible." Anyway, I got the diagnosis age 46, and basically, if I can say this, I'd like to say this because this is something I've been working on, a project I've been working on how what consultants and doctors should say to people when they diagnose them. So my consultant said to me, you've got Tourette syndrome. This is a very rare condition, and I don't know many people in this area who have it. And there's the door and goodbye. And so I was left high and dry, and it was a very negative feeling. I felt relieved that I had a name for the condition, but because of my personality, I'm pretty resilient. I get knocked down, I get back up again, and I wanted to know all about Tourette syndrome. How it functioned, how it manifested itself in me as a person, and get to understand it. The first few months I used to fight having tics, and it wasn't the best thing to do. My best thing to do was to understand it. So I've now published an article that I've sent to consultants and a few universities, and it's a three-step guide to being diagnosed with Tourette syndrome. And step one is for reassurance from the consultant, the doctor, to say, right, this is not a rare condition. You are not on your own. My doctor said this is the worst condition he's seen. So not to say any negative things like that, but positive things. Step two is to hand the patient telephone numbers, websites of Tourette's associations where they can go for support, and recommend a path of surrounding yourself by support. First of all, with your family, then your friends, and of other people who live with this condition. And step three would be to educate yourself as much as you can about Tourette's and how it fits in with you. Check about co-occurring conditions and how those co-occurring conditions affect your Tourette's. You know, do they stimulate your tics? Do they make you more anxious so you tic more? So I published this little leaflet because I don't want people to have to experience what I did. And I was an adult. You know, and I'd hate to think how young people, and they go with their parents and they're told this is a rare condition, you know, it's a lifelong condition, where they need reassurance. And it's not the end of the world. You know, we can have big and successful lives. After my diagnosis and understanding it, my life improved. You know, I'd had a chaotic life. So it was a positive thing. And getting a diagnosis is not a negative label. It's a positive understanding of how you function and how you tick. Excuse the pun.
And so thank you very much for this, all this testimony. It's interesting because all of these you did by yourself, right? If I understand correctly, the doctor announcing the diagnosis to you did not provide any of this.
The doctor who he saw, he said, this is the the worst case of Tourette syndrome I ever seen. I'm talking back to him afterwards. He'd never seen anybody with Tourette syndrome before, even though he was a neurologist, or he didn't think he had. I can't say I did it all on my own, because I didn't, because one of the best things for me was to get in contact with other people who had Tourette syndrome, who lived with Tourette syndrome, other adults. And from these people, I was inspired. I learned life hacks. I learned strategies to be able to deal with my condition. And for what one thing that I used to experience a lot was tic attacks, but not a lot of people understood what tic attacks were. They thought they were anger. They thought they were rage. So I broke down myself trying to find out what started me in a tic attack. Was it the environment, something in the room, something stimulated it? Now, I've got sensory processing issues, so like noises can scare me pretty easy, and they stimulate tics. So I've got a place upstairs, a safe place in my bedroom with a curtain shut. And when I feel this massive urge of pressure coming towards a tic attack, I take myself there because I know I'm safe. I know I won't get injured. And from not having any control over a tic attack, I've got to the point where I've got these strategies in place. I'm in control. I'm empowered because I've already planned what's going to happen when the tic attacks come. And that's an amazing feeling, you know, because the feeling of helplessness when you're having a tic attack is unbelievable. Now, excuse me. I think the only thing I can say is, and the only thing I would highly recommend out of everything that I've said tonight, is for the individual to educate themselves about the condition, about Tourette syndrome. Fighting it isn't the way, but understanding it, looking for the strengths that come along with our neurodiverse condition, because there are some strengths and some positive things. I never knew about those things. And also, we're aware of the challenges every single day. We don't need reminding of the challenges, but what we need understanding, we need support to live and work and exist among our fellow humans with our challenges. It's a positive thing. It's a positive future. It's not the end of the world. And I want to get that message out there. And I'm not underestimating that a lot of people struggle and suffer. I mean, I do myself. I'm like dislocating my shoulders and my knees isn't a pleasurable thing. And people say, oh, is it great having Tourette syndrome? I say, well, of course it's not great having Tourette syndrome because I suffer pain from time to time, but I love my life. You know, I love the person that I am, Paul Stevenson, who lives with Tourette syndrome.
Yeah, thank you so much. I just have a few more questions, if it's okay.
Okay, sorry, I go on and on talking and talking.
No, it's great. I'm just so curious.
Yeah, I feel so passionate about trying to make a difference in the future for people. So, you know, that's why I do what I do, really.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, I can see. So what I'm getting is that I suppose you had treatment after that, or you followed some cognitive behavioral therapy. I feel like just getting the diagnosis was huge, right? And how did your family and peers reacted after that? Like, were they surprised? Were they relieved as well?
This is a really good question. And when you sent the questions through, it was pretty poignant, because I remember at the time before diagnosis, I've got four young children at home, and to see daddy not having control over movements of his body, shouting, I have coprolalia, and I just didn't know what was going on. My parents, who were very religious, they prayed for me, because that's the first thing that they thought of. They didn't know. I had a possession, because nobody the age I was, 46, there were nobody about who I knew was like myself, who hadn't had a diagnosis. So we were all scared. I was frightened. The first thing that the doctors did before I was diagnosed with Tourette syndrome was give me a brain MRI, because they thought I had a brain tumour. But because I couldn't keep still while having this MRI, I had to be sedated under general anaesthetic. So the doctors were like confused. My family was confused. But after the diagnosis, we had a name for something that we didn't understand. We didn't know everything about Tourette syndrome, and it was the beginning of my journey. But I built that support network up with my family first, my wife, my children. Listen, daddy's still daddy. I've got this condition called Tourette syndrome. This is how it manifests itself. I don't mean some of the words I say. They just my brain doesn't filter or project what's going to be said. But if Daddy says something that is loud or makes you jump or scares you, right away I used to say, I hope I didn't upset you. That was a tick. And I'd explain to the children because they were very young. And I've never apologised for Tourette syndrome, but I've also been very aware that my tics do offend people and upset people. And I'm not that sort of guy. I don't want to do that. So I take responsibility by saying, listen, I'm sorry if I shouted at you, if that hurt your feelings. This is not my intention. This is my condition, Tourette syndrome. And like I say, not apologising for Tourette's, but apologising if I've offended or upset.
And EG, at schools, like, did your teacher notice it? Or did they say anything? Did they know about it? Or it was the same as your peers and family?
Well, there's no way they could miss it, but nobody did anything about it. And I think today, if a kid in those grades was having, the symptoms that I had, I think it'd be picked up on right away. But, back then it wasn't. So there's no way they could miss it. But nobody, teachers didn't say anything. The kids picked on me, and so it's a very, very odd dynamic, which really led to me really being the odd man out a lot, and being pretty isolated, even in a crowd, which really remains something that sort of plagues me to this day. I'm one of those people who can, be sitting with very good friends and feel like I'm just really not part of the group. And I think that's partly me, as a defense mechanism from before, when I had to always be wary of being too close because, I could be betrayed or turned on or mocked to my face or those sorts of things.
Mm. And so you didn't know, anyone with tics as well, like friends or no?
No, I didn't meet anybody with Tourette's until probably a couple years after I was diagnosed, at least. So I was, well into middle age, honestly, before I met somebody who, another person who had Tourette's.
Mm. And you mentioned that no one could have missed it in the classroom. So was it more vocal tics or large amplitude movements, or what was it that was the most bothersome, you would say?
Well, I think, I have facial grimaces, so, that's pretty hard to miss. My fingers and toes are kind of going constantly. I have a few more complex all-body tics, but really I'm able to do those more when I'm away from other people, so a lot of people haven't seen those. the vocal tics, sniffing, throat clearing, I sort of have a stutter breath before I talk a lot. Some people said, that guy's got a stutter, and it's not really a stutter. It's that I can't get the words out that way. It's more, I just take a little series of rapid breaths, like before I start talking. And I guess I have some, I said throat clearing, some of it may merge into a little bit of grunting. So, the vocal stuff is not probably overwhelming. I suspect my wife and kids might disagree because they have to be in the room with me, but that's probably that's not what's going to get me noticed in a room. If you go to a classroom, everybody's sniffing and coughing, so that part I think you can kind of blend in. The facial grimaces and fingers, on top of a desk or something, that's a lot harder to hide. So I would say what would have been visible during school mostly, unless you were talking to me, would be the, just the body tics and the facial tics.
Mm. And may I ask, did you also have ADHD or OCD symptoms that were more prominent or visible or bothersome than your tics?
No, I think I have in some ways, you know, what I've heard called Tourette's OCD. It's not like I have compulsions, or obsessions. I may be getting those mixed up. You know, it's not like if I don't flip this switch five times, something bad is going to happen to somebody. It's just if I don't flip it the right way, or if I, you know, when I'm brushing my teeth, tap my fingers on the counter a certain number of times. If I don't do that, it's just not right, and I have to do that. So it's a little, I'd say, different than sort of classical OCD, but certainly a connection there. A lot of my tips are just sort of purely random Tourette tics, but others, there's a pattern to them, which I think is, you know, the OCD thread. You know, I have to tick just this way, and I have to get, you know, this body part in just this position before I can blow my nose, or before I can brush my teeth, or, you know, whatever it is. So there's, but for me, it's all just tics. So I can't say, you know, any of those things bother me more than the tics.
Thank you for sharing. So at the end, who diagnosed you?
Well, a neurologist, and it was actually kind of funny. I mean, in the 90s, I went to my own doctor. I went to a neurologist, you know, complaining about tics, and, you know, the words Tourette syndrome did not come out of their mouths, and nobody had any idea. But by the 2004, you know, the internet existed, and I was getting a master's in business administration, and we were renovating a house, and we had two kids, and you know, things were pretty stressful. And I was up late studying one night and just ticking uncontrollably, like a Tasmanian devil or something. I could not stop moving. And since we did have the internet then, I just Googled tics and twitches, and everything came up was about Tourette syndrome. And, you know, I had heard of it before, but, you know, I had heard of it in this old stereotype that everybody who has it swears involuntarily. Don't do that. I swear voluntarily all the time, but not involuntarily. So I didn't have that. And so, you know, and historically, stereotypically, that's the defining feature of Tourette's for a lot of people, including me back then. And so, you know, I didn't know that was it. But everything that came up was about Tourette's, and there's some story about a day in the life of somebody with Tourette's. And there's, like, you know, reading my life, and I, you know, my wife was reading in bed, and I just went up and I just put my head on her stomach and said, like, this is what I have. And I just started sobbing. The Tourette's Association of America was around. It was called the Tourette Syndrome Association then. And so I called them. This is in the earlier days. Everybody didn't have fancy websites with all the information. But I called them, and they sent me a list of doctors in my area. So I just went and saw one. And he just sat and talked with me for 15 minutes or so, and just said, well, it's Tourette syndrome. There's nothing else it can be. And I had a law degree at that point, and he really seemed very surprised about that. And I think, you know, maybe it's because some people with Tourette's also have learning disabilities, or these other factors that go along. You know, there may be some perception that, you know, that people with Tourette's can't succeed academically, you know, even maybe ADHD or something. But that was never the case for me. And so I was 44, just shy of my 45th birthday, and I finally had a name for this demon that had been inhabiting me since I was a child.
And so this neurologist confirmed your suspicion of the diagnosis, and did he provide any resources, any answers you were looking for? What could have been better about this announce of the diagnosis?
Well, he did prescribe me a medicine, and I'm not even sure what it was at this point, to control the tics. I took it for a couple of days, but I'm pretty sensitive to medicine, and I didn't think it was helping with the ticks, and I thought it was just making me not feel well. And so I stopped, and at that point, it's like, listen, you know, I'm 44 years old, and I got a job, and I got education, and I got a wife, and I got kids, and I got some friends. It doesn't really matter if I tick. Everybody important to me knows that I tick. Hasn't really held me back in my life overall. And so I just said, I don't care. I won't take the medicine. But other than that, no, there's no, and I don't know if really, well, what we call comprehensive behavioral intervention for ticks, CBIT. I don't know if that was really a thing then. It was basically just, here's what it is. Here's a prescription. If you want it, but beyond that, you know, there wasn't much. But in other ways, it was everything, because just knowing gave me so much peace. I started a new job within the same federal agency not long after that, and I knew a lot of the people there already, you know, but the first thing I could do was have a meeting with all my staff and say, hey, you know, this is me, and I have Tourette syndrome, and I just want you to know that, because I know you're going to see me tick and twitch, and that's why, and it's okay. Because before then, every new situation, every new job, there's sort of this period where going, oh, I know I'm ticking. I know I'm ticking. I know they know I'm ticking. I know they know I'm ticking. But there's no name for it, and we didn't talk about it. And so it was just this sort of silent thing sitting there in the middle of every interaction. It just the, you know, the unknown of it. And so being able to just say, there's a name for this thing, and this is how you will see it, just takes it off the table. And I still do it now. I talk to a lot of big groups over the years, or, you know, briefing groups that I don't know. And I just got in the habit, if it's a group I really don't know, I'll just start off saying, listen, I have Tourette syndrome, and I have facial twitches, and you will see that. And then, like, nobody cares. So so just knowing really changed my life.
Yeah, I can sense that. Just the diagnosis, just a word, provided relief. And yeah, and also in your interactions, in your work, right?
Because before, I was just this twitchy freak that nobody knew why. And now it's like, now I have a diagnosed medical condition. Not that it like provided respectability, like that's the wrong word, but just, you know, there's a reason for this behavior. And I think a lot of times, you know, people just want to know why. And if you know why, then things are a lot easier to accept. So I was very open about it. Coming back from the doctors that day, my wife said, well, are you going to tell anybody? And I said, nah, I'm going to tell everybody. And it was really interesting. I got really three different reactions. One group said, oh, that's what's going on. Thanks for telling us. I wondered. Another group said, what ticks? What are you talking about? And I just thought, have you ever looked at me when we're talking? Because kind of hard not to see that. And then the third group, which I just found fascinating, was, this is more than one person, this is probably three people, said, I knew you had Tourette syndrome 5 minutes after I met you. Are you telling me you didn't know that this whole time? And those are people who had family members or they knew who had Tourette, so they were familiar with it. But of course, none of them, you know, came up or would come up, you know, and I don't blame them. Say, hey, you have Tourette's, right? Yeah. My brother has Tourette's. And do you have Tourette's? But I just found that hilarious, to be honest. Like, the people I'd known for several years are going, yeah, I've always known you've had Tourette's, and I can't believe you didn't know that. So I just found that really very amusing, that for that third group of reactions.
Yeah. And Devin, after having the diagnosis, I suppose you started cognitive therapy, behavioral cognitive therapy, or a treatment?
Yes, we did. I personally didn't have a lot of like cognitive therapy. It was more a therapy in general, psychiatrists and things like that. But you know, we definitely say everyone in the world needs therapy. No one else is special or different. Everyone should go to therapy.
yeah, it's true. And so my question is, do you think like when you were very young, right, in schools, how difficult was it to own the diagnosis? What did you tell your peers, even though you were probably more able to control them with the treatment and the therapy than before? What did you tell people?
So I was very fortunate in the sense of, but even before I was diagnosed, I was always involved in theater and performing on stage. So my parents and I went over, like, how do we discuss it? And we kind of treated it like a monologue. So feeling comfortable, feeling confident about talking about Tourette was never really a hurdle I had to go through because it was just something that came natural to me. We always say that Tourette is the seventh most interesting thing about us, and that's something that I take to heart. So when it came to tics in school and things like that, I was ticking like crazy. I couldn't stop it. And I wasn't the one that could hide it and then release it when I came home. I was just moving left and right and constantly on the go. But I luckily had a lot of friends and family that were very supportive, a lot of teachers that were supportive and helping me through my education. So that's something I'm very lucky with.
Yeah. And so I suppose associations were a big part of how supported you felt, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I remember when I just got diagnosed, there was an HBO special that came out. Gosh, this was back in 2003, give or take. It was called I Have Tourette, But Tourette Doesn't Have Me. And I remember we just made it a big party. And when it aired live, I had all my friends over, we had a sleepover, and all the parents and all the moms came over, and we just watched and learned from this documentary and this, this mini video. And I just remember just feeling so seen and feeling so supported by having all those friends and family around to, you know, watch this with me.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity, actually. And so it was like a sleepover, like a party, right? Like a social event.
We made it an event. Absolutely.
Yeah, we should all do these, like, in our towns. So from my understanding, the doctor himself or herself did not help so much, or did they offer some kind of other support? What do you think?
So the first, I want to say, 10 to 13 years, we had Dr. Peter Myers, who helped amazingly. And he was so knowledgeable, but so friendly in helping me and my sister, as well as my parents, go through properly educating ourselves, getting ready for, you know, IEPs, getting ready for school, any accommodations we needed. And then throughout the years as well, we also met, and well, we moved from Pennsylvania. I live in Virginia now, and we have an amazing therapist. I'll do a shout out, Dr. Bain Ford, who I am very supportive on having him be in our lives and very grateful for him helping us through this as well.
Okay. So are you still seeing a doctor, or your tics have been better? You're more able to control them now? How has it been?
I would say they've gotten better in the sense of people don't know off the bat that I have tics. So they've now kind of subdued to what may look like just a normal thing, a normal twitch or an itch or something like that. But I still see a therapist. I still see my doctor. I still see a psychiatrist. I'm still taking medication. Luckily, I've been on medication that has worked at least for, 8 years. So having my tics are definitely not gone. My anxiety is still there. My depression is still there, but is definitely more controllable and maintained.
And so Do you feel that compared to 10 years ago, people are more knowledgeable, more accepting of tics or Tourette's, or you still face with difficult situations where it's challenging?
I definitely say they're more accepting. They were always accepting, at least in my circumstances, 10 years. But I know in certain things, it's people think of Tourette's and they think more of the vocal tics, the verbal shouting, screaming, cursing, things like that. And that's not I've ever had. So the awareness of it's not just screaming has gotten significantly better.
Mm, yeah. And do you think of ways to improve this awareness and education? Does it come from the media, the movies, or the associations, or the doctors? What's your take?
I believe it comes from everywhere, not just having the what you can control and going out there and spreading awareness. I used to do a lot of public speaking in schools and in seminars for Tourette awareness and tic awareness. But another thing too is branching out to anyone who is interested or has never heard of Tourette. We always say if you're all involved in my life, you've all been touched by Tourette. So we got to make sure that we get you educated or at least knowledgeable enough to make sure that there's a fine line of understanding of, you know, what this all entails. I joke with my husband. We've been married for almost a year now. The very first date we had, I sat down and I said, okay, this is what I have. It's going to be clearly obvious to you in a couple minutes what it is. And I don't blame you if you don't feel like you can handle it, but I want to let you know on the first date so we don't waste our time. And we've been together for almost 8 years now.
Well done. It was a good move.
Yeah, it was a bold move, but hey, I don't waste time.
Yeah, it's true. It worked. Okay, and are you still engaged right now with associations and work, or it's, as you said, like constant awareness and sharing your experience with your friends and colleagues?
Mm-hmm. I believe that you're never done with awareness and spreading the knowledge of Tourette. Currently, right now, I am in between associations at the moment, just because I got married last year. We're moving into a new home. I just needed a break to make sure I had the work-life balance, you know, situated. But I never have stopped advocating for Tourette.
Devin, do you think that saying the word Tourette's is offensive? Would you have preferred just a diagnosis of tics or tic disorder?
I don't think it's something that's offensive. I do know originally it used to be called Tourette syndrome, and syndrome was a little dark for my liking. So Tourette is fine, tics is fine. They did drop the syndrome, or at least a lot of it now. A lot of people just call it Tourette awareness, Tourette disorder, which works well for me.
Thank you very much. Paul and Iggy, what's your take on this?
I think it's very important that it's given a name of Tourette syndrome because the tic disorders can cover many different things. FND, stress, strain and infection. There's different issues that come along that make people tick. You know, they get transient tics. And whilst it can come under a category of tic disorder, by having the diagnosis, the correct diagnosis of Tourette syndrome, it gives it a proper name and you can get an understanding. If someone said, oh, you've got a tic disorder, well, why have I got this tic disorder? You know, is it genetic? Has it been there? Is it lifelong? Whereas Tourette syndrome, we know that Tourette syndrome is genetic. We know it's a lifelong condition. Mm-hmm. So it sets perimeters and borders for us and allows us to get to know Tourette syndrome, to embrace it, not in a loving way, but to acknowledge the fact that this is my condition, you know, and it's personal to me. So, don't like the idea of tic disorders because it's far too open to to get misunderstood or to get misdiagnosed as a different condition. So by saying Tourette syndrome, if it is Tourette syndrome, then that's what it is.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
I'm team Tourette, I think, and it's hard to say why. Maybe I don't know. Tic disorder just sounds boring. Like I got high blood pressure. Or I've got an ingrown toenail, or I've got a tic disorder. Tourette syndrome somehow sounds historical and mysterious and unique. And if I got to have this, I'd rather be historical and mysterious and unique, I guess, than just, oh yeah, I got a tic disorder. I don't know. So then that's probably a very silly reason for preferring it, but I prefer Tourette syndrome.
Paul, do you think nowadays people are more understanding or accepting of Tourette's?
If you ask me the question, do a lot of people know about Tourette's syndrome? I would say yes. Do a lot of people understand Tourette's syndrome a bit better? I'd say there's still a lot of work to be done. Mm. I've been at a conference this week, beginning, and I was ticking. I was buying myself some food, and this guy goes, "Have you got Tourette's?" And I said, "Yes, I have, yeah." I said, "Did you notice?" He says, "Why don't you call me a," and he said, "an expletive, a rude word." And I went, "Well, why would I do that?" He said, "Well, I thought you had Tourette's." And I said, "Well, I have coprolalia, but I wouldn't call you that. Mm-hmm. If it came out, it came out." And so people still automatically assume that Tourette's is about swearing or the comedy aspect of Tourette's. Yeah. I've got to say that in schools, a lot of our young people are really struggling with getting support and understanding. And some children suppress the tics, and it's teachers and educational professionals, they observe this and then they expect, well, you can control your tics, and they don't get the stress and pressure of suppressing tics. And we do it as a safety thing. You know, I shout armed robbery when I go into banks and petrol stations. And so I suppress when I do that. But it's hard work and it's very tiring. So I think in schools, while they say they've got an understanding, there's still a lot more work to be done. And I'm not criticising teachers there, because I think what needs to be done, they need to be educated about Tourette's and other neurodivergent conditions when they are learning to become teachers. So we need to go right back to the source, and it's the same with doctors. This information needs to be passed to these professionals when they're in their early stages of learning the career. And then they can pass that on to other people. They can go to a school and this information can cascade down to the other teachers. So I think that's the future, is getting in very early and educating people when they're in university, if they're going to become teachers or medical professionals or what. That is the way forward, I believe.
Well, thank you very much. I think that's really interesting. EG, is that also your opinion?
Oh, I think so. Obviously, there's still, you know, a lot of fools out there who use it as a joke or who don't understand. There is a lot of cruelty in the world always. But I will tell you that, you know, like at work, I've been at the highest levels of the federal government for 2 decades, the career federal government. I really had only one boss say who thought less of me because of it. I found most people don't care. They care what I get done. Most employees don't care. They care what I do for them. I have, heard second or third hand, somebody, because we all have, these video meetings now. If I have my camera on, my tics are quite visible. So, I have heard through the grapevine that some people said, boy, it's really hard to watch and listen to EG today. Like, yeah, I mean, I get it. I get it. I mean, it's a little disappointing, or I don't want to say it hurts my feelings, because I know what I am and I know what I do, and I know it can be hard. So can't really blame them for that. But I think overall, yeah, I mean, I have great friends and great team at work, and most of the time nobody cares. And if I go talk to a group, I was on a panel discussion about something a few weeks ago, I just lead with that, and then honestly, just doesn't seem like anybody cares. So I feel very fortunate in that, and I never really have been in physical danger, I don't think, because of it, but there are stories where people are, I did get pushed a lot and shoved into lockers and books knocked out of my hands and that kind of stuff in school. But as an adult, I haven't felt like I was in danger because of it. But then there's a lot of fools in the world, and you never know who's going to see you and decide that you're going to be, you know, their pet bullying project for the day. So there's a little something in the back of your head always that, you know, you got to read the room and be aware of your environment. And one of my big things, and I'm very slowly working on a book on this, is about how having Tourette's has made me a better leader. And one of the things, you know, it's just, I think it's the emotional intelligence. And it was a, really a survival mechanism. Like, you walk into a room, you better be able to figure out real quickly what everybody's vibe is and what they're thinking, because it could be negative to you and dangerous to you. And so I really feel like I have a very finely honed sense of that I can walk into a room and read other people's emotions really well. And that just totally outside the Tourette's context, just the, you know, executive leader context, you know, that's invaluable.
Thank you very much, Devin. Do you have something else to share about your experience of accepting Tourette's, living with Tourette's, or advice messages you want to spread?
Absolutely. So the biggest advice message that I love to live by is find your troop and love them hard. When you find your batch of people that are there for you, who love you and support you, keep that relationship going. Know that you're loved. Know that you're cherished. And making sure that just because you have Tourette or you have some sort of diagnosis doesn't mean that you can't still live a normal life. I work as a supervisor running a team of 30 associates at a time. I'm married. We're buying a house. You can still have your normal life and do whatever you want to do. I travel. I still perform on a theater. I see my friends. I see my family. Just because you have a diagnosis doesn't mean that you're not like anyone else.
This is something that I think that if you want to see the essence of a person, let's not concentrate on what may hold them back, but concentrate on what drives us forward. And with the right support, I couldn't get employment when I first got diagnosed with Tourette syndrome, but now I've got a career as a public speaker. Finally, I'm 60 years old and I've got a career and a fulfilled life. So the future is there. Tourette's won't stop you. This is one of John's quotes. Tourette's syndrome won't stop you from attaining your dreams. It just may alter them somewhat and send you in different directions, but you will still get there. So you've got to believe in that and not give up hope.
Well, thank you very much again. I wish you all a pleasant day, and we will be back soon for the next episode of JD's in the Air.
Bye. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for allowing me to be in this interview as well. I appreciate it. So it gives you a platform to speak to more people and help educate and reassure, I think. So thank you.